G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Adam White is outmanaged today. Managed, which means Scott Gullen, host of the award-winning podcasts and journalist, author of the award-winning The Score column in the Herald Sun, is back again. Good morning to you, Scotland.
Thank you, Daniel. Yes, wonderful to be here.
Nice to have you back.
Yes, the program seems to be working. Our leader sounds relatively okay.
He's yet to collapse.
Sophie's not required, I believe.
No, Sophie was back yesterday. In fact, she was very quiet yesterday. Something might have been up with Sophie yesterday. We'll check in tomorrow with Sophie.
No, but it's wonderful to be here.
Good to have you back with us on a Thursday morning. There's a bit happening in the world of news too, so it's great to have your insight into what's going on behind the scenes.
There's a lot happening. You know, Larry King, I've just noticed something in my paper.
Larry King,
the TV
Larry King
talk show.
Yeah. What's Larry up to?
He's seeking his seventh divorce. He's at
seven.
As we welcome our co-host, speaking of divorces.
Speaking of divorce. Not sure what's happened there. John
Hello
Hastings is
Hastings
the man.
No divorce.
Nothing yet.
Nothing yet, Breezer.
All good. Maybe a bit of news coming your way, Breezer. No. We're not quite sure. Good morning to you, John Hastings.
Very happy man. Morning, Half. Morning, Scotland.
So Larry's 85, and he's been married to Shauna King for 22 years, yet this is number seven.
22 years?
Seven. That's not bad.
That's excessive.
You reckon that's excessive?
That's excessive.
That's
averaging one a decade.
That's excessive as far as I'm concerned.
Larry.
Excessive.
There you go. Good on you, Larry.
Look, I'm all for love, and love's a great thing.
Yeah,
he obviously hasn't found what he's looking for yet.
He can fall in and out of it.
Must be very picky, our man, Larry. If he's got through
seven
and hasn't quite worked out what he's
anyway,
after.
That's my stat for the day. By the numbers.
Well, the award-winning podcast will be back this afternoon, too.
Of course it will.
By about midday, we will have another episode of By the Numbers.
How many divorces? On average, AFL.
We'll try and get those numbers.
That's a very...
Just pure stats.
Very topical.
It's a bit
yes. Topical at the moment. Close to home for us here at the Breakfast Club.
Well, once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
But we move on quickly.
Because we best. Hey, Duke, I'm hearing some information from your side of the world that perhaps there might be some travel coming your way. Is that right?
Another rule.
Yes. No, what?
I mean, another gig.
I floated this with my boss, and that is my wife.
Uncle Frankie.
Yes. I had an opportunity to go and commentate in the Caribbean Premier League.
Scotty, if there's a place you want to go and commentate in any sort of league or premier activity or not,
the Caribbean
is where you want to be going to commentate.
I just think of that Tom Cruise film, Cocktail.
Cocktails.
That's all I think of when I hear, because I've never been there. So that's all I think of.
Well, that's the thing. I'd never been either. So obviously there's a fair bit going on at Mr. Frankie down there, and Bree's doing 70 hours a week.
Yeah,
and
she should lift it to 80.
I said, listen, Mrs. H, is it okay if I go to the Caribbean? She said, look, you haven't been. The only two times I was down to go to the Caribbean, once I did my shoulder, the other time I did my ankle. So I thought I'd never get to the Caribbean, and then the opportunity came, and bang, we're off. So 1st of September.
How long is this little competition?
It's about 3.5 weeks. So I think I'm doing about...
Chris Gayle in attendance? All
games.
These types?
He'll be there. Yep. Andre Russell. All the West Indies stars love to play the Caribbean Premier
Any
League.
Aussies get a gig?
I think Linney's over there. I think Benny Lachlan plays this one. Chris Green plays all around the world as well. So there's a fair host of Aussies in there.
And what other commentators of note?
Ian Bishop.
Oh, yes.
Bishop.
Darren Ganga's going to be there.
Are you based out of one particular place?
So we go to Guyana for the first few days, which is not overly a great establishment, I'm told. But then it's Jamaica and Barbados. So I've heard they're quite good, those places.
And then head down to Kokomo on the way
back.
So
it's quite tough. I'm going to pack the golf clubs and just... Games don't start until a little bit later over there in the Caribbean. So just sneak in a little bit of golf and then... Just lay by the pool.
This is an interesting revelation.
Outstanding activity.
Just commentate on a game that I love.
How good was Elizabeth Shue in Cocktail?
Elizabeth Shue.
Can I just raise that right now?
Full stop. Elizabeth. And, of course, the highlight of her career was Karate Kid.
Was she in Karate Kid?
Yeah, Karate Kid 1.
Really?
Yeah.
As what?
As
she would have been very young, man.
Yeah, as Daniel LaRusso's girlfriend. Johnny
That's
was
a great stat
Johnny's
for me.
Ex.
I only Shannon came into my world in Cocktail.
Oh, no.
And I've followed her
career. You have to go back through the tapes.
Karate Kid. That's good by you.
Pretty sure.
I didn't know that.
Pretty sure it was her.
Now we're backtracking.
No, I'm not. There she is. Absolutely, that's her. Karate Kid, Elizabeth Shue. Bang. Nailed it.
Good work.
Yeah, outstanding work from Elizabeth.
So, Duke, you've had Byron Bay near the Caribbean.
Yep.
Have you actually been washing anything?
I have been. I can assure you I have been. A few other things as well. It's just bubbling away. So
bubbling away.
Got to make sure the dogs are getting walked as well, which is all high on the list. But no, I was in there yesterday. There was a lot of dishes yesterday.
Ceramic detailing?
Ceramic detailing.
Fair to say we don't need any chef issues while you're in the
country. No, we do not need that. No, everything's going good. I've just been trying to get the liquor license sorted, Scotty. It's been tough. But that's finally come through.
Do they do character references on people?
Yeah, the police rang up, the local Frankston police. I said, what kind of establishment is this going to be?
Wow.
I said, don't worry.
So you reckon it's nearly ticked off?
Yep, it's come through. So now we just got to... I've been tasting a little bit of wine to try and get on our wine list.
Of course.
Which is fun. Which is fun. That's the fun part of it.
How's your world going at the moment? You're packing the bag for the Caribbean. Mm. You're tasting wines for the liquor license.
Yep. It's good to be the king. Most of our listeners by 10 past 6.
They tend to leave a lot of bottles laying around as well. Just, well, take that one with you. Just make sure you... get the whole use out of it.
So
it's
what
great.
Time are we open till then if we get it up and running?
Well,
summertime,
it'll be
liquor license.
Around about 9 o'clock, 9:30. So it's not
a bit
late.
Early. I'm only warming up then. And you're going to kick me
That's
out.
That's the issue. So we'll work through that issue. Try and get
But I can start drinking at 10
time.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll have breakfast.
Yep.
It's positive.
Yep. day drinking, get home early, drink responsibly. That's
yes,
what we're
yes,
all
yes.
about. That's what we're all about.
Gamble responsibly.
All that sort of stuff. Mm. Now, there's some feedback coming through about what might happen if you get yourself a Chris Gayle party in the Caribbean. Is Chris part of the Caribbean Premier League?
He is, yep.
Is he throwing sort of nightly affairs?
By all reports, he is.
So he has
try and stay away from that.
Stripper pole in his bedroom.
Why not? It's an athletic apparel pole.
I just thought that's appropriate.
It's part of his fitness regime.
It's a regime pole.
It's a regime pole.
Yeah, Whitey's got one too.
I actually would believe that. He's a very strange unit, our man, at times.
It's a regime pole, he keeps telling me. He can't get enough.
So Chris Gayle will have a party and you'll be able to attend?
Well, yes. I've had a few run-ins over the years, so I don't think I'll be attending. But
have you run in with Chris?
A couple of times.
Have you?
You would have verbally introduced yourself on the football field, cricket field, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Is that because... You're a demon fast bowler bowling to the top order and you're not taking, not
demon.
Stuffing fools gladly.
That's right. Demon medium pacer bowls a lot of slow balls. Intimidating no one.
Did you win that battle or did he hit you for, how you say, a big six?
No. I've been hit by, how you would say, a monstrous six. Or a couple of monstrous sixes from Big Henry Gayle.
How you say big six. Six. Yeah. I was trying to think of a nice way
That's
to put it.
Very funny. There's some controversy off the SMS because as soon as you mentioned Elizabeth Shue and I mentioned the Karate Kid, there's some feedback coming through from Michael from TV Land who's suggesting that Elizabeth Shue is in Charles in Charge. Now, that's just not the case, Michael from TV Land.
This is just starting to confuse me.
Now, Nicole Eggert was the... Charles in Charge.
Don't know her work.
Well,
did you watch
Charles in Charge, Scott Baio, back in the old days?
Happy with
Nicole Eggert was our girl there.
Her career didn't kick on.
Didn't go that well after Charles in Charge, which was a ratings bonanza at the time after school on a weekday. But Elizabeth Shue, not to be seen in Charles in Charge.
No.
Not to be seen.
She kicked on, won many awards. She won an award for something.
Well, she was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress for Leaving Las Vegas.
Yes, that was a good show.
Was our girl.
Who was the male actor with her? Oh,
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. He'd had better days.
Although,
he struggled in that.
He had some moments. He had some moments, Nicolas.
Was
that one he filmed here in Melbourne? Knowing.
What about...
And there was another one on the motorbike, isn't there? Some Knight Rider, Ghost Rider or something.
Ghost Rider.
Yeah, Nicolas.
He had a few...
He was hot for a little while. The Rock.
Our, Snakes, didn't he?
Our was producer was in...
What?
He was in it. Ghost Rider.
He was in Neighbours.
Andrew Mays, the host of The Breakfast
Club. Andrew Mays. Yep.
Was in Ghost Rider.
In Ghost Rider.
What?
Yeah.
Filmed down the road at Marvel Stadium.
Yep.
Most of it, or a lot of it.
Yeah,
I wasn't aware of this.
He was in Neighbours. Goes in as an extra.
Well, yeah, he had a milkshake once in Harold's Cafe at Lassiter's. That's what we do know.
I didn't know he had a movie
He was a background milkshake drinker, is what he was. and pumps himself up on it. He reckons his sucking of straw technique was award winning. Yes. And that's why they got him back for the second episode where he had a toasted sandwich.
A toasted sanger. I love that. The milkshake and the sanger.
I knew he was a Lasseter's devotee and a regular at Lasseter's.
Not a Hollywood movie.
But not Hollywood.
Big screen.
That's big time.
I wasn't aware of that.
I love that.
He did have an agent.
He didn't.
He did.
And he's nodding his head.
He's on a website. You whack up, you know.
Got to try and get this up.
Actors Alive. Agency.
So we can have let our listeners have a look at this.
We need to get this on the RSN Breakfast
Revolution
page.
We need a full Michael Felgate, you know, life of.
This should be a open mic situation after 9 o'clock on a Tuesday with our milkshake drinking.
My life in movies.
Toasted sandwich eating regular at Harold's Lasseter's Cafe. Goodness me. That's thrown me off the scent a bit. But Nicole Eggert, no. Michael from TV Land, and not in Cocktail
okay.
Dreams was the place, wasn't it? Brian Brown, of course, did a great job.
Great movie.
This is when the Beach Boys came back. They were back for Cocktail. Yeah. They disappeared for about 2 decades, and all of a sudden, in the Florida Keys, in a place called Kokomo, they're back on track.
Brian didn't last the whole movie. That was a pretty moving scene.
It was a setback for Brian.
It was.
Haven't got a team yet. Yeah, we're obviously looking at maybe a bowling change at this stage. But again, we'll get through training today and make, again, the best decision we think is the best combination to win this game.
Well, you better do something about that quick, Tim Payne. If you haven't got a team, you better find one. There's a test match starting tonight at Headingley, and we are very, very keen to see how it all unfolds. I reckon Adam Collins, host of the award-winning Final Word podcast with Jeff Lemon, which I'm sure will be back through the third test as well, and you'll hear it on RSN 927. He will be very, very excited about what might be coming his way and our way through the next 5 days of Test cricket. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Colo, welcome.
G'day, Harp. Good morning to you all.
Great to have you with us. Good evening to you. Now, my understanding is you're at a bit of a function with fellow journalists, English and Aussie journalists. Are you wearing your colours? Is it like state versus state, sort of mate versus mate, origin?
We do this once every Ashes tour with the English hacks and the Australian hacks gather for a feed. We break bread tonight. We're at a fish and chip restaurant about 500 metres from Headingley. And on the wall here at this restaurant, there's a picture of Ian Botham running amok in 1981, that famous test match here. So it set the theme, it set the tone rather nicely for the week ahead.
Well, it's going to be very exciting. We're all waiting with the bated breath. I'm sure you guys are as well. And Tim Payne said he hasn't got a team. What is the 11 going to look like? Is Bancroft going to play? Is Peter Siddle going to play? What are they doing with the world's most expensive and best net bowler, Mitchell Starc? What's happening on the ground, Colo?
I reckon they do have a team, Half. I reckon they have a team and they're not telling us. So if I were to be wagering on it, not that I would, I'd be saying that James Pattinson is playing and Peter Siddle is not playing. There'll be no change to the batting lineup. Justin Langer yesterday kind of told us that already. But Tim Payne today, you know, he was coy. He was keeping the bat and pad nice and close together. But as far as the bowling is concerned, James Pattinson was always playing this test match. And the fact that Peter Siddle, 34 years of age and back-to-back test matches, I think they're mindful of the risk component associated with that. So that means that Hazelwood and Cummins will retain their spots and Mitchell Starc will miss out yet again. And Michael Neeser won't get a start. I know I was talking about Neeser a couple of days ago on the basis that they might go Siddle for Neeser to have a containing bowler, but it looks like Neeser won't make the cut either.
Well, Adam, what about the conditions over there? You've been on the ground. No doubt you've had a look. By all reports, it's a little bit drier surface than we're probably used to at Headingley.
Yeah, it's dry, it's slow, but there's grass on top. So we're not quite sure what that means tomorrow. But you look at county championship cricket here through the course of 2019, it's been mostly favouring the spinners and long games that have gone the whole way through the distance in the county championship. So we're not expecting it to be the sort of pitch that was played on between Pakistan and England here in a test match in May last year. That was quick. I mean, the rating of the pitch, according to Cricviz, is the fifth quickest pitch in the world over the last 15 years, but it doesn't seem to have those component parts. It's already quite straw-coloured, quite dry, and had a look today. There is that grass covering, but as you know, there's every chance that grass will come off in the morning. So on that basis, it'll be a fairly belt and braces lineup. They won't be preparing for it to be hanging around corners in the morning or anything like that.
And what about the top of the order? We're obviously flagging a change there, Tim Payne, in his press conference about potentially bringing in a bowler, but is there any word on the street about our top order shuffling?
In a word, no. I think that Langer yesterday, when he was asked about it, was like abusive that they kept the batting as it was. Look, with Stephen Smith leaving the lineup and Marnus Labuschagne entering the 11 formally, of course, he was the concussion sub in the second innings on Sunday, but I don't think they'd be willing to make a second change. Chip threw out a bit of a red herring today about Marcus Harris, but I don't think there's anything to really take from that. I think Harris might play a role later in the series, but Cameron Bancroft's going to get another opportunity. Usman Khawaja's going to bat at 3. Labuschagne's going to bat at 4. And they'll keep it as it was at Lord's in that second inning. So even though there has been a lot of speculation about the Australian top six, especially given they don't have Steve Smith there, let's remember what happened at Birmingham a couple of weeks ago, 122 for 8. All hell was breaking loose until Smith steadied the ship. But I think they are going to dance with the one that brung them for the time being anyway.
So why does Bancroft get so many credits in the bank? Other than he's a good catcher, Colin.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is that. I don't think it's so much about credits in the bank as much as it's having some continuity. You don't want to give the impression that after...
But they're both going ordinary.
But the wholesale changes, I just don't see them wanting to do such a thing at this stage of the series. I mean, Australia are still 1-0 up. If they win this week, they retain the Ashes. So it's not as though they're preparing for this to be sort of the sort of week where they're ringing the changes for the sake of ringing the changes. I appreciate your point that Bancroft's not going well, but one point I would make about Bancroft is that he's a right-hander and facing Jofra Archer, who'll be bowling up the hill tomorrow. Broad will be bowling down the famous hill here from the Kirkstall Lane end, and Archer will be coming up the hill. So there's not a slope, but it's quite pronounced at one end and the other. And we saw the way that Archer was able to deviate the ball away from the left-hander. He had it on a string last week. So I think the fact that Bancroft does shuffle a long way across his stumps and in some respects almost smother the movement means that he might be best placed to negate the effect of the new ball, and that will be his job. From the way I see it, if Bancroft manages to bat out the first 20 overs, in some respects he's done his job. Obviously you want him to accumulate runs along the way and make a big score, but if he can blunt the new ball in the context of a series where it looks like Jofra Archer is going to be such a huge component part, I think they probably would take that. Of course, he'll want to go on and make a decent score, but we've seen how poorly openers have gone in England over the last 5 or 6 years. Really, openers, it's been a graveyard for them. So I guess it's about balancing off what's realistic in these circumstances.
Well, Colo, you mentioned Jofra Archer there. You're obviously getting together with the media from both sides of the fence. Has there been a lot of chat about Jofra Archer? Has this been expected? Certainly from my point of view, playing against him over the last couple of years, I've seen the up and downs of Jofra Archer, but that was something pretty special in that Lord's Test.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's compelling, isn't it? It's hard not to talk about him. It's hard not to have him as the focal point. To think that he came in on Test debut and immediately became the most important player in the Test match. You seldom see that with a Test cricketer or a bowler or a fast bowler, and he's immediately become the most important bowler in the England lineup. One bit of colour around Jofra Archer, which I think you fellas will like. I was watching him bat in the nets today, and he walked into the nets and he immediately started leaving the ball like Stephen Smith with all his lightsaber leaves. Like, well, this is a fraction odd. And then he started doing that Steve Smith crouch before he faces the ball with the same back lift and the same bending of the knees. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if tomorrow Jofra Archer walks out the bat and tries to mimic Stephen Smith. The guy has such an amazing amount of self-confidence. He thinks he can do anything. He was bowling spin today, left arm spin in the nets and beating the bat routinely. This guy is a freak. So, it's kind of the all-round package with Archer. It's that we saw what he can do, and obviously he's a phenomenal talent, but it's just the way he carries himself. He seems not to be at all affected by the scene that he's playing on. He was on Twitter last night mostly complaining about the fact that there wasn't the ability to put an HDMI cable in the television so he could play his gaming console, the game Fortnite, which he plays all the time. Like, this is the guy... this is the way this guy's built. So in terms of pressure and the big stage here at Leeds this week, he seems unflappable. So if he can put on a similar performance that he did last week without Stephen Smith in the 11, they're as best place they're ever going to be to go 1-1 in this series.
And it's nice to have Dylan Shield with us from the Bombers after a big win over there in the West to guarantee finals activity in 2019. I'm sure it's been a good week at the club. Dylan, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure to have you anytime. Just before we get to your world, you would have heard through the overnight news services and yesterday afternoon that Steele Sidebottom has a ruptured testicle. Have you ever ruptured a testicle, Dylan?
I have not, but I've heard of that happening before. My first year, we played Adelaide and Callum Ward had a collision with Rich Douglas.
Yes.
And that was the unfortunate result for for Richard, but he certainly got Cal Ward back later that year with a nice bump to the head.
Was that retaliation? I remember that. Was that a retaliation bump from a knee to the Goolie region?
Well, Leon Cameron saw it as that, so we had to fly the flag for Cal Ward that day.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I like this. Old school.
Something sort of for the score. This is your sort of stuff.
It's very hard to concuss Callan Ward. No, cement head.
Cement head.
It was actually... when he got knocked out in that prelim against the Bulldogs, the rumour has it is that he was obviously out cold before he hit the ground. I don't know if you remember the moment. The rumour has it is that he actually passed the concussion test when he did it in the medical room. But obviously you couldn't clear him to play.
Yeah, right.
He passed the test. It's extraordinary.
Nice work. You must have had a low baseline to be passing the test.
No, he's very tough.
Well, no, I know that, but when he did the test originally as the baseline measure, he must have just fudged it or not been overly sharp that day.
Or maybe he's very smart.
Or maybe he's very smart.
Ruptured correct. Testicles becoming the new
osteopubis. Everyone's getting it.
It is, though. It's suddenly a thing.
It's the second one this year, isn't it?
Scott Thompson.
Trying to stay away from that.
No, it's more prevalent, Duke.
No.
In my time in footy, I've never come across a ruptured testicle until this year when we've got two.
And there was one last year. Like
more chance of winning the lotto, you reckon?
More chance of being hit by a vending machine.
Steel Sidebottom did a smother. That's how he got his. Just a normal regulation smother. We shouldn't be smothering at training. That's a bit excessive.
What's going on there? Chill out a bit. Who's ever putting that much defensive pressure on at training? Goodness me, there's his first error. But he's out with a ruptured Goolie at the moment. So good luck to Steel. Needed a steel front bottom. That's what he needed. Another steel side bottom. We've got a bit to talk about with you, Dylan, because you had to go west last week with your boys and win the game. You had to do it, and you did it. Why? You had minus 54 contested ball, minus 11 inside 50s. How did you do it?
Yeah, well, when you read those statistics, it's hard to come up with an answer. But it's weird. It was a weird one. You know, it felt like we were in... You know, we had good control of the game throughout the night. Obviously, Freo had their moments. But, we felt like we had, you know, good control of the contest. And we were really satisfied with the result. But when you read those numbers, it was quite weird. I've never really been in a game where we've been beaten so heavily in key indicators like that in the contest and still get the win. So... yeah, probably an outlier, I'd say. You don't want that happening every week.
I don't think it's sustainable, as they're saying these days.
Yeah, but, you know, Clarko was adamant that contested footy wasn't the be-all and end-all for Hawthorn during their three-peat, so...
True.
Could be the case here.
What was the theme during the week? Woosha copped it for, you know, being asleep and not paying any attention against the Bulldogs. Did he go up a level, or what was sort of your... Because you're a completely different team, obviously, when you got to Perth.
Well... I think that's really unfair on Woosh because he's pretty consistent regardless of the result.
Consistently not showing interest.
Well,
this was the commentary last week.
That's all. Not my commentary.
Yeah, I know. I heard the commentary and I thought it was unfair because if you know they go back a couple of weeks to when Stringer kicked that goal out of the middle for Gold Coast.
Up and about.
No, watch the vision.
the
vision of Woosh. He was just.
He might not
cold.
Have seen it.
That's what Woosha does.
His demeanour.
Did he bring emotion, though, for this game? Because it was fairly important.
Obviously, he had to probably get the players up a little bit. But otherwise, we kept the week pretty consistent and punched out a really good week and reviewed the game pretty heavily, you know, coming off the Bulldogs loss. And obviously, leading into the final hour of the game, the players sort of understood that there's a fair bit on the line here and managed to get ourselves up. So... it was a interesting week, but now we've got another opportunity this week.
Well, when you come off a game like that, is it just a case of just going, right, that's one out of the box. We need to put that to bed as soon as we possibly can and then look forward? Because it's kind of hard, isn't it? You get into that, do we delve into every single aspect of the game where it went wrong, or do you just go, look, these are some key areas we think we can control moving forward?
I believe there's something to learn in every game you play, especially a game that you lose by 100 points. When it becomes a pattern of behaviour or, you know, something that's pretty consistent throughout a season, then there's certainly issues and you need to be reviewing the game pretty heavily. In our case, we certainly didn't dismiss it and think, oh, this is a once-off. We did look at things that we need to look at, but we weren't going to let that derail the rest of our season because obviously we knew we had an opportunity to still make the finals. And, you know, if we carried that that performance into the Fremantle game, we probably wouldn't have won it.
Are you a believer in the perfect time for a road trip? Like, you've had two bad losses in a row, Port and then the Bulldogs, and then you've got to go west. The world's against you. You've only got what you've got with you on the plane to support you through the journey. Maybe a few fans pop in. Is it the perfect time for a road trip? You're a believer in that?
I don't mind road trips. I mean, again, coming from a club that travels 13 times a year at the Giants to a big Victorian club that travels six times, I'm always keen for a road trip. I mean, I should be saying six times is too many times to travel.
That's right, yes, that's right. That's all the fans want to say.
But, you know, it's a really good opportunity for a young team to travel together, you know, as a club and get the job done in a hostile environment. It's a true test of camaraderie and... you know, the best teams are able to win games, you know, under pressure away from home. So, you know, it's a good sign, and I was really rapt with the result, you know, that the guys were able to get.
What's it like playing against Nathan Fyfe? Because we look at him from afar, and he's the perfect size. He seems to just wander around when he wants to get the footy. He does. Is he the hardest because of his size to play against in the middle of the ground?
Oh, well,
I mean, Cripps is pretty similar.
When you come across a guy, you know, these sort of midfielders, especially someone like Fife, he's very damaging in the air and on the ground, and he's obviously such a big midfielder. Mm. It's quite unique. So it's probably what makes him, you know, top three in the competition. So we had to put Paddy
Ambrose
on him. It was a different role for Paddy, but we were satisfied that he was able to limit his impact and. Fife wasn't able to get too much space on him.
The Paddy Ambrose move was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And he's that sort of versatile player for you that can play a role pretty much anywhere on the ground. He's done that before. Is he the Mr. Fix-It for the Bombers? Any problems if we just break glass and bring Paddy out?
I couldn't speak more highly of Paddy. The way he goes about his footy, he goes about his training, his mindset under pressure in games is phenomenal. He's a guy that... would run through a brick wall for you if you told him to. He's a never-give-in type character. And, you know, that was his first ever game. I think it was his first ever game playing midfield in football. And let alone in an AFL game on the best player in the competition.
So it's not bad.
You know, there's guys there that would sort of shirk that opportunity and feel the pressure. But he just loved it. And, like I said, I couldn't speak more highly of someone like Paddy's attitude to footy.
Now, he's mentioned some of the key categories that perhaps didn't go your way on the weekend, but the most important one at the end of the day is the scoreboard. And there's been a fair bit spoken about the personnel that you haven't had through the season, that you got a fair few of those back on the weekend. Do we, even though we sit here and go, but they've got injuries and all that sort of stuff, do we underestimate the impact that not having your better players has on teams?
Well, you know, I think there's a few teams going through this year that have experienced... you know, a lot of injuries and probably having their best, not having the players in their best 22 out there every week. You know, certainly affects the performance in some capacity. But as you'd imagine, a lot of teams don't like to publicly use that as an excuse because you can't. But you know, because you're trying to always develop and maintain a team system that enables players to be able to come in and fill a role, and you know, regardless of who's playing. But certainly. To some extent, you want your best players playing every week because that's what the best teams are able to get continuity throughout a season. And the more you can get your best 22 playing together, the better you can see yourself going deep into the finals.
It must have taken a lot of confidence coming back and having a good, tough, hard win like that. As you said, as we said earlier, it was, you know, the stats were down. Probably all the stats pointed to you guys not getting over the line in that game. But, you know, to bounce back after the Port game and obviously the Bulldogs game, huge amount of confidence leading into the right part of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great result, and you know, not shying away that, you know, Fremantle have had their challenges as well. So you know, we weren't travelling over and taking on West Coast, who were coming off a premiership. We faced a team that was probably around the same mark as us. We've both teams have had inconsistent years, and you know, that was just the result of it. We were come off, you know, five wins, and then come off two really bad losses into a win over in Perth, which was obviously no easy feat. So, hopefully we can maintain that for, you know, this week and you know, the week after.
Can I ask you about Mitch Brown? He's sort of an unlikely key forward, sort of. Geelong, he struggled a bit, and then he sort of was a journeyman for a while, but he just keeps getting it done. Like, his season two goals again, 9 marks. He just bobs up in the right spots. Is that a good way of describing him?
He goes about his work quietly.
Yeah.
His running ability is incredible. He's an elite runner for a forward, someone of his size. Yeah, if you sort of watch the vision or, to watch running patterns off the ball, he's as good as anyone's in the competition. To be able to outwork his opponent, get up the ground, that's why he obviously takes a lot of those uncontested marks on the lead. So he sort of gets up the ground. And enables our deeper forwards to get back.
And he's a good kick for goal, then.
Yeah, very
good.
He's a very
good kick. Not many forwards are these days.
Apparently not. It's an art that's gone out of the game. Bombers fans will be very keen to know that Michael Healy's pulled up really well from that first game back. How's the big fella?
Yeah, Big Bear. He's
Big Bear.
Yeah, that's what they call him. I was really happy with his first game back, especially coming off that type of injury with a shoulder. And, he was reading the ball really well. And his first contest, he got crunched and tackled to the ground. So
best thing that happened to him.
Best thing, yeah. Got him into the game. Yep. But he was great for us and he's put up, really good, to my knowledge.
Glenn McFarlane always goes there to get the latest news in the world of sport. He's back again from the Herald Sun after writing the paper again today. Good morning, Macca.
G'day, Half, Haysto, and Scotty. Macca. Yeah, not that much in there today. Just a little bit.
Just enough. There's a couple of little bylines.
A little bit of sack stuff. A little bit of sack stuff, but there's a fair bit of Collingwood stuff yesterday.
Well,
wow.
We're going to start with that because this is where not only does your professional integrity come in, but also your emotional integrity, because your attachment to the Black and White Army.
Very tough.
Which concerns me a little bit.
Differentiate between the two.
I'm sure that's right on occasion. Jaden Stevenson was the story of the day. Ruptured testicles later, but Jaden Stevenson is the story of the day. It was yesterday because he's worked out the loophole, which is going to work in his benefit. The floating fixture has helped the Magpies.
Unbelievable, this story. Nathan Buckley breaking news yesterday at his press conference. I think everyone was flabbergasted, or as Robbo calls it, flabbergasted.
Flabbergasted by that comment.
I had to throw that in there. Sorry, Robbo.
That's one of my favourite grabs.
Flabbergasted
by that.
That is excellent.
I made myself laugh. That's bad, isn't it?
Unbelievable
that Jaden Stevenson, and we all know that it was actually Jaden who actually said to the club, can we try and see what's going on here to see whether there's any chance, given the floating fixture the way it is, that if we play on the Friday night, I might be available. Thinking, I'm sure internally the club thought, this is not going to happen, but we'll just check with the AFL. All of a sudden they check. Yeah, sure, you can play on Saturday. Unbelievable.
Because it was a 10-match ban.
I'm not as against it as everyone else.
I'm not against it.
It was banned from 10 AFL matches.
Really?
Those 10 AFL matches have passed.
I have no problem with it.
Why
you
can't
don't?
He play the next day?
Why would you be able to?
I'm not sure about the optics. Here's me. I'm going the opposite to my team.
But it didn't say 10 weeks of football.
You get suspended for 10 matches.
10 matches.
Yeah, okay. For. So with if a player is suspended for striking for two matches, can that mean that he play VFL if the structure works that week?
I see no problem with that.
I think it opens the floodgates for sure about players will do that.
That's a good call, if
the team is now playing. Because what we know in the past is that if you're suspended for 2 weeks, that you miss those particular rounds rather than days.
Yep.
It's more a round scenario. So as long as we have some clarification.
Well, that's a great point.
And that's the query.
And now,
correct.
And Jaden's brought it to the attention of the whole AFL community, not just Collingwood. If you have a VFL game post that last week or match suspension, you're entitled to play.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely
a good thing. Why would that be a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think any of us knew that this was even a possibility. Sort of kicking myself I didn't push this further to try and find out. But no one thought about it because historically the way it's worked is that you're suspended for that particular round.
Yeah. Well, and the floating fixture's a factor in this.
It is.
Because there was no certainty about when Collingwood would play.
No.
Their VFL calendar would have been set, but the AFL calendar was never set. So
don't get me wrong. I'm happy that he is playing this weekend because it's potentially a huge advantage for Collingwood.
Oh, it's massive.
The second week, obviously this week doesn't really matter, but the fact that he's going to get some game time under his belt, potentially against the same opponent, Collingwood playing against the same opponent next week, Essendon. So they'd be the ones that privately would be scratching their head and saying, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And the AFL yesterday probably I know that Rebecca Williams put a couple of calls into the AFL yesterday, and the AFL were unwilling to discuss the matter yesterday, which I found a little strange.
Well, that is interesting.
Mm. What about the potential for injury here then? Would they have been preparing for the next week? So he's training block.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a really good point.
Midweek, is he then becoming off a massive running block or whatever?
Yep.
And he's still got another week leading in.
So it would have been 2 weeks.
Yeah. Mm. So is he ready to get back into?
I think he's been ready for a while.
I imagine they might just restrict his opportunity game time wise, minutes wise in the game to get him through. But I have zero problem with this.
As long as we know, and neither do I, as long as we know that hereafter, going forward, we know that if a player is suspended and the team play on the Friday night or whatever, there's a hard and fast rule. What worries me is when there's not hard and fast rules, that we seem to be operating on the fly with a lot of things at AFL headquarters, and I'm not sure that's a great thing sometimes.
It could be an issue. I mean, what if a bloke gets 1 week for some Mickey Mouse thing?
Yeah.
The AFL team plays Friday. He still trots around the VFL to keep his match fitness up.
Which has never happened before.
But that's never happened.
Exactly. That's my
now
point.
Now I'm coming more towards Glenn.
Thank you. See, I've convinced
him.
Because
it's opened correct. It has.
Because they
go, hang on,
box.
The Stevenson
is.
Rule is
yep.
He's suspended for the AFL match, but he's run around the VFL.
Well, there's no way now that scenario won't happen.
It has to happen now.
Because the benchmark precedent. Has been set. The precedent has been set.
I had a fear that there might have been a mistake made and that Collingwood's called the AFL and somebody's just answered the phone and said, no worries at all.
The receptionist has gone, no problem. That's fine.
But it's going to be dependent upon the receptionist.
Yeah, okay. All cool.
That's fine by me.
There you go. Is it Jaden? Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, it's fine, Jaden. Yeah. Good luck. It's going to be dependent upon the VFL calendar, and if the VFL have buys willy nilly too, and then they might play Saturday, and their team's playing Sunday, so they might miss. But there will be occasions now that there are opportunities for players who are suspended to play that weekend.
I would hope the AFL would now come out half and say, "Here's the hard and fast rule."
They have to
because yesterday they weren't really willing to discuss the matter. Yesterday,
why would you not come out and clarify?
Well, because there was so much angst going around yesterday.
Was there?
There was angst on Twitter. It was angst.
The journalists have
Twitter
just
world
been blindsided and they're angry.
Correct.
That's what's happened.
I did a little jig when I heard that it happened. I thought, there might be a chance to go a bit further than I thought in the finals, Collingwood.
I have no issues.
No, I don't have an issue with it.
Whatsoever.
As long as they come out.
10 matches is the penalty.
As long as they come out and explain the situation.
Lose your license for 3 months.
Precedent's the only concern.
Mm. Well, precedent sets it up.
Yeah, I know.
This might be the precedent.
I think the AFL wanted that and didn't think through it.
That's more the point. They just didn't even bring it into calculation.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now it's been, their eyes have been opened to this opportunity. They've got no choice now, but because they've ticked this off to make this a hard and fast.
So basically, you're not suspended. You can play VFL if you want to have a run around.
If you miss
VFL,
your AFL match,
if have a little run around.
If your team's not playing that day, I don't see a problem with it.
I can see your point of view. I just wish there was a bit more clarity about, there was a hard and fast rule. There should be. We're a multi-million-dollar. Well, billion-dollar competition, really, aren't we?
But we are finding things all the time, Macca. Scenarios all the
time
that come up that we've never encountered before. And it's happening more. Like, every year there seems to be more things that we've never encountered before that come into the realm. And you think, well, hang on a second. We haven't got a rule or a plan for this. So we have to do things on the fly. I don't mind that. You can't. Mm. I don't think you can legislate for everything, every possible scenario in the world.
But there'll be players out there now who, this is the new precedent. This is the new going forward. This has changed footy in a lot of ways. Unless they come out and say this was a one-off because it was a gambling offence rather than an on-field offence. But I don't think it should make any difference whether it's gambling or whatever.
Suspension is a suspension.
Yeah. Correct.
If it's 10, yeah.
Correct. And I'm glad he's playing. I think it's fantastic that he's playing from a purely selfish sort of reason. It's good for him. It's good for the Pies. But just a bit more clarity would have been better, I think.
I'll tell you what's not good for the Pies. Ruptured testicles.
The year of the sack coach and the year of the... I'm not going to go there.
There'll be a podcast about this soon.
Sacked! I should not laugh about...
Scott Thompson.
Steele.
No.
Scott Thompson.
Next week, Steele side.
Cringing.
Steve Hocking had one in the 1989 grand final.
Oh, of course he did.
Yes, he did too.
He did.
Play on?
Yeah.
Did. Unbelievably played on.
Scotty Thompson played on too.
I'd be crawling in under the bench, under the physio bench. Get me out of here.
a setback for
the
Magpies.
A setback for Port. And, like, not where you want it to be, of course, in a location, but also in a training session. That's not... That's the ultimate friendly fire, isn't it, when you look at it? Unbelievable that this would happen. And fortunately, they've got the bye. I know that Scott Thompson played... he had the 1 week off afterwards, but it's fortunate for Collingwood that there'll be a bye between this round and the finals that still will be right to play, but any sort of surgery in that area is not what you wanted and what you require.
No, you don't want any medical.
I'm not
going to
go with the
there.
ripping bloke jokes, but he is a good fella, still side bottom, we know that.
Bloke.
But it is a really concerning thing for the Pies ahead of this week. They need to win this week to... Friday night to keep alive that top four dream when the Lions knock off Richmond on the weekend. It sort of came out of nowhere in a sense that the club didn't quite realise how serious it actually was and then had it looked into and, requiring surgery, which is not good.
Setback for Steel Sidebottom. Tell me about the Justin Longmuir situation. Bucks has given him the all clear tick of approval to go and do his thing through this finals campaign in terms of interviews and discussions with Fremantle because they seem to be coming for him. Bucks is okay with all this?
Well, he has to be because they're allowed to do that. Ideally, it wouldn't be the scenario that you would have your, not just an assistant coach, but a really critical assistant coach. He's so important to Collingwood's structure. Speaking to another club about potentially getting a job there.
Does he then fly over for interviews and that sort of thing and miss days of training then? Or is it very much through Skype and all that?
I hope that it's that way. I'm not sure, but you're right. It's a concerning
He wouldn't
thing.
Miss training.
You wouldn't
not.
Think so.
They can fly over here.
They're not playing finals.
I mean, this is outrage the Coaches Association.
Yes.
Who are embarrassing themselves.
They're
again.
Doing a great job.
Why would you deny one of your members the chance to get the gig of a lifetime because... He's got a couple of things on during September. They tried to make a hard and fast rule, which the clubs rejected.
Knocked back.
Because they said, it's bad enough they try and tell us that you can't employ someone who hasn't got a certificate nowadays. And then, so thankfully that rule didn't get through. And
got
he can,
on, the head.
On his day off, they get 2 days off a week like normal people, go and talk to him. It's ridiculous to try and restrict them. Daniel's son?
Well, he's not the AFL-CA aren't trying to restrict Justin Longmuir from going to his...
They wanted no contact with coaches in September.
Oh, they've come around.
They haven't. They got knocked back and put back in their place, Daniel's son.
Their policy was for interviews to be done in the bye week before the finals. But
their policy was no talkies in September when...
Yeah.
It's up senior. To Kilda and Fremantle now to work out how and when they want to interview people, says Mark Brayshaw, the AFL-CA chief.
As bad as that August 1 dilemma, which I'm not happy about.
No, you don't like
that. No, he hates situation. That, doesn't he? But Justin Longmuir, he's obviously done an outstanding job at Collingwood so far. If you talk to a number of the players, he was so instrumental in the way the club sort of shaped up last year and continuing into this year. So he's got to be an outstanding chance for that.
Is it
job.
His to lose, Macca?
Potentially. I love this new... It's the new buzzword, isn't it? His to lose. It's the way it is with the coaches, isn't it, now? So, I think it is, but, I mean, there's still a couple of others out there. Like, Peter Sumich is still... We feel like he's been going for a senior coaching job for how many years now, Scotty? Probably 15 to 20 years. But he has got a few supporters in that sort of camp, that Frio sort of camp there as well. I think it is. If they're doing the right due diligence, that's the other buzzword as well. I'd be looking at Justin. I think he's an outstanding candidate, and we know he's going to do it at some stage. To go back to the club where he played and the like would be outstanding, I think.
Will Ross be coaching next year somewhere?
I don't think so. The support of his ex-teammates, don't they? Everyone forgets the fact that he left St Kilda. The angst when he left St Kilda was extraordinary, if you look at it.
Yeah. What if Essendon, as Dylan left
the
building,
query.
If Essendon lose by 10 goals tomorrow night and then by 15 in the first final?
With Jaden Stevenson kicking 7.
John Worsfold's tenure would still...
That's the one.
That's the one.
Because I don't think it'll happen at St Kilda, despite the push. Pretty similar. It's not going to happen.
Why would you get him back there? That makes no sense.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
But that is... And
Essendon's the one.
It is. And Ross might sort of, even worst case scenario, take that year off, do the Harvard trip that he was...
How about he booked that in like a day before he got sacked?
Get in.
Because they'd be paying for it.
Get in.
He's got...
Well, he would anyway through the CA. They'd be able to look after that too.
Yeah, but you lock it in before he gets sacked, a couple of days before he gets sacked.
His ex-pupils are massive on him, aren't they?
Yeah, everyone's
the praise that they get.
The good ones,
Waltz,
but if
Goddard,
you spread...
Del Santo.
You spread to the worker bees who played under him. I don't think the sentiment is
all the assistant coaches.
Yeah, or staff
who were inverted
commas. But the stars
very
love
tired.
Yeah. Absolutely. The stars just worship everything he stands for.
He did, because he drives people hard. That's what he does. He drives. The stars do worship him, but the average foot soldier, you know, he drives very hard. But I know there was a lot of players in that Fremantle group, and I know a couple of them, or certainly one of them I know really personally. I won't say who it is. He absolutely adored Ross, and he'll be shattered. He'll be shattered this week that Ross is no longer there.
David Hussey's great stuff. We love his work. One of our all-time favourites from Australian cricket, Victorian cricket, and joins us in studio every now and then as well. And he's back again to talk cricket with us, the Melbourne Stars, and of course the Ashes. Huss, good morning.
Morning, Alf. Your introductions get better and better every year. Fantastic.
I appreciate the feedback. It's nice. I get a lot of abuse in other parts of my life, so this is good. It's nice to have you with us. Hey, I understand, Huss, that you were at Lord's for the second test, but you didn't actually see a ball get bowled.
Yes.
What the hell happened?
Turned up day one and the heavens open up and I end up seeing probably more champagne than any cricket ball's been bowled. But it was all the English do it very well. They're very social and it was a wonderful day had, even though there was no cricket played.
Are you telling me that you went to Lord's for one day?
Well, yes, I was there for work. And
oh, come off it.
I was there for work and then, yeah, one day, met with a few people, saw a lot too many Australians and, headed home the very next day. So probably missed the best day of cricket going around on day two. But it's been a fascinating series thus far.
It's always nice when there's more champagne flowing than cricket balls, in my opinion, Huss. It's very nice. But what was the trip all about, mate? I noticed you were over there working with a former club of yours in Notts as well. It was a bit of a study tour.
Notts were kind enough to invite me into to one of their games and just see how they go about preparing for a T20 match. And through Dan Christian and Peter Moores and Steve Mullaney and some of the older firm at Notts that I've sort of played a lot of cricket with. It was more of a humbling invite to come down and watch them play and prepare. And they do things a little bit differently than what we do at the Stars, but all in all, it was a good research trip.
Not bad.
Nice.
To just get jag a little research trip over to England.
Hang on.
But I was just going to ask, Huss, this is rolling around very, very quickly, as it always does every year, the Big Bash, but you guys have got on the front foot and made some very good signings, probably the biggest in Nathan Coulter-Nile, who I think is a very good acquisition. He's going to be bowling very nicely at the MCG. But also, you've got a couple of young kids as well, Clint Hinchcliffe and Lance Morris. Tell us about Lance Morris.
So Lance Morris is a young WA, left-arm fast, quick. I'm not sure he knows exactly where they're going at all times.
That's okay.
He can scare a few batsmen, which is probably not the worst thing. But, he charges in from last year. All the boys don't really like facing him in the net, so he'll definitely get an opportunity to play this year, once or twice, three times, however he goes. But we'll ease him into the competition, and hopefully he does quite well. But most importantly, hopefully he has a bit of fun and can be around the Stars for many a year.
What about we back to England just briefly with Jofra Archer? You've watched him in the Big Bash. Are you not surprised, but what he's doing to the Aussies and how big a factor he's become in this series?
Yeah, it's a good question, Scotty. Like T20 cricket is totally different to Test cricket or four-day cricket, what I'm accustomed to. But the way he's come in and kept his pace up throughout his 20-odd overs in the first innings and then I think he bowled 18 or 19 in the second innings was just phenomenal. A great effort. And his biggest test now is to see if he can back up only on short rest time at Leeds tonight, I guess. So the way he changed the momentum of the game and bowled fast, bowled short, and really tested the Australians' defensive skills and how to handle short pitch bowling, I thought was fascinating to see. And I think the Australians got their work cut out in handling that pace, that extreme pace and extreme bounce from a fuller length as well. This test coming up.
So we were talking before, Huss, about the way that the Australians, and not just the Australians, but Test cricketers and international cricketers play the short ball these days, and they take their eyes off it and they turn their heads into it and they've got no idea what's happening once they take their eyes off it. What are you as a coach teaching your players? You talk about the young fellow Lance Morris who bowls heat in the nets and no one wants to face him. Surely you're teaching them to watch the ball in the nets while they've got their lids on.
Well, It's pretty simple, isn't it, the game? You just don't take your eye off the ball. I remember my father always used to say to me, and he knew nothing about cricket, he said, never ever take your eye off the ball. That's the first rule and the tenth rule. So, always keep your eye on the ball. But I think it's more of a technical thing. Just go slowly and just start off with some tennis balls and build a bit of confidence that you can actually watch the ball go past your eyes or relatively close to your head and just gain confidence that way. And then once you get confidence with the tennis balls, start quickening it up with some harder balls and then put the helmet on sort of thing. And then just, really watch it and develop that technique of ducking and evading the short ball. But most importantly, you never, ever take your eye off the ball.
I remember Shane pulling me aside when we were down at Warrnambool and saying to me, listen, if young Geordie ever gives you, just give him a good swift kick up the ass.
Alistair Clarkson recapping some stories, chatting to the Lewis family as Jordan Lewis came into his world a long, long time ago. This weekend he'll play his 319th game and final game of AFL football for the Melbourne Football Club. Four-time premiership player with the Hawks, of course, All-Australian, Peter Crimmins medal in 2014, the premiership year, and been fantastic for the D's as well. And he's had a good chance to say goodbye this week as he gets ready for that last game. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Louis, good morning.
What's only taken a retirement to get me on your show, huh?
Well, we've had you once, sorry. I reckon we had you once.
Oh, yeah, about 1990.
And then you became a Fox Footy superstar and you ditched us.
No, that's not true.
I think it's the glasses. It might be the glasses. We don't just sort of roll that sort of type of flashiness on our program.
It's been a big week. We had Isaac Smith in here yesterday, who is playing his 200th this week. He was a bit flat that Clarko was at your presser and not his the other day. Have you had a chat to Isaac about this?
Well, they asked Isaac, when did he want his press conference to be? He found out that mine was at 1. He goes, well, if that's happening, there won't be too many at mine. I might put it on at the same time, which suits him.
That's actually what he said in the end. This week, though, for you, I mean, it's been an amazing journey. Have you had a chance to get in contact with a lot of people that have helped you along the way, or is that sort of something you'll plan to do after?
Oh, I've certainly had a heap of text messages come through and managed to reply to most of them as yet. But,
Except mine.
It's been a funny week. I suppose, Ruffy's retirement last week, and he had a function after his retirement, and we had a couple of beers at the Auburn Hotel, so you catch up with a lot of people, especially Hawthorn people.
Yep.
So that was a great way to sort of rekindle and kick that part of it off. But yeah, certainly I think once the season's done and you can enjoy a few cold ones, it's always a good time to reminisce and catch up with people.
And Hobart on a nice warm Saturday afternoon, perfect way to go out, Louis.
I couldn't, if I had a script there, I would have put that game down and penciled it in, which is, quite unique.
Well, grew up in Warrnambool, that's weather, right. Similar.
Similar.
Possibly. We're stretching.
No Wales.
No Wales.
No Wales.
No Wales.
No Wales. Louis, I must be one of those ones where you're just getting back to that text message.
Yeah, absolutely. It's short and sharp. You know that.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to having a DML. How is the DML going, actually?
Really good. We haven't got too much left, which is nice. So, yeah, the hardest thing is actually just not drinking 2 or 3 bottles a night.
Louis, you've probably been asked this, Four Flags, there'd be many highlights. Have you got one that's a bit off-centre, or is it the Premiership's the obvious way of looking at your career?
I think that's the obvious way, but I've always, people ask me what, the game that sort of sticks out in your mind, and I always say the prelim final 2013, just because of the history that we had with Geelong, clearly beating them in 2008, then they beat us nearly every game ever since, and then you come to a game that's so important to both sides, and for us to be down at three-quarter time and come back and win that game, it's a whole range of emotions swept over us on that night, and I suppose the biggest one was relief because we had been, dominated in a sense, not necessarily by big margins, but certainly win-loss record against them in the past.
And just the decision this week, Louis, was there any part of you that wanted to go on any stage through the year, or is this always going to be the outcome?
I think this was always going to be the outcome. The hardest thing that I suppose any professional player has to wrestle with is if they're fit and healthy at the end of the year, they tend to think they can go on, and I certainly feel all right, in terms of body, but, the mindset to do pre-season again and then
you know, tackle the season and the ups and downs that that provided, I certainly think that sort of side of the game I couldn't probably process. And ever since I've sort of retired, you know, decided to retire, just the freedom of your mind, and you're really happy in a sense that you can go on and enjoy the next party of your life.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.